Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into something fundamental, the cell.
The absolute building block of life.
Exactly. And we're using Dr. Hoffman's fantastic lectures as our guide to take a tour, specifically through the eukaryotic cell.
It's a great way to really get a handle on it.
Our goal here is simple. Pull out the key insights, the stuff you really need to know about how life works at this tiny, tiny level. Think of it as your shortcut to understanding the microscopic world inside and around us.
And you really can't understand biology or even ourselves without grasping this. Dr. Hoffman does a great job showing just how much complexity is packed into these things we can't even see.
It's mind-boggling.
It really is. We're talking incredible scale, intricate machinery. It's a whole world.
Okay, let's kick things off with scale. Dr. Hoffman hit us with a pretty surprising fact right away about eukaryotic versus prokaryotic cells.
Oh, yeah, the size difference. It's massive.
He said a typical eukaryotic cell is about 1,000 times the volume of a prokaryotic one. How does that even work?
Well, it's because it's bigger in all three dimensions, right? About 10 times longer, 10 times wider, 10 times taller.
Ah, okay. 10 times 10 times 10.
Exactly. That gives you the 1,000-fold volume increase. Dr. Hoffman stressed that size in biology isn't linear, it's more logarithmic.
Meaning each step up can be a huge jump.
A really huge jump. You go from atoms at the nanometer scale, way up to meters, and cells, they're smack in the middle. In that zone, he called the invisible to the unaided eye band.
Right, so you can't just look and see them. What tools did he say we use?
Well, the basic tool is the light microscope. You find them in most labs. You shine light through the sample, magnify it. Pretty standard stuff.
Okay.
But to really see the fine details, down to molecules, almost atoms, you need electron microscopes. They use beams of electrons, not light.
And that gives much higher resolution.
Much, much higher. The images form on a computer screen. That's how we get those incredibly detailed pictures of cell structures.
Got it. So we can see them now. Let's talk about that fundamental split Dr. Hoffman mentioned, prokaryotes versus eukaryotes. He said the names themselves are a clue.
They really are. Prokaryotic, pro meaning before, karyon meaning nucleus, so before the nucleus. They came first, evolutionarily speaking.
And eukaryotic.
Eukary means true. So having a true nucleus, and that's the key difference right there, whether or not they have what's called a membrane-bounded organelle.
Okay, break that down. What's a membrane-bounded organelle?
It's basically a smaller structure inside the cell that's wrapped in its own membrane. Think of it like a room within a larger house.
Right.
Prokaryotes, Dr. Hoffman explained, are simpler. They only have one membrane, the outer one, the plasma membrane. That defines the cell itself like a tiny little bag or, as he put it, a tiny test tube for all the chemistry.
So just one big compartment inside.
Essentially, yeah. That whole internal space is the cytoplasm. Their DNA just kind of bundled up in a region called the nucleoid, but crucially, there's no membrane around it.
Okay, but what about ribosomes? I remember him saying both types of cells have those. Don't they make proteins?
Good catch. Yes, both have ribosomes, and yes, they make proteins. That's translation. But here's the key point Dr. Hoffman made. Ribosomes are not enclosed in a membrane.
Ah, so they don't count as membrane-bounded organelles.
Exactly. So their presence in prokaryotes fits the rule. And it's vital they're there because, as Dr. Hoffman kept saying, proteins do, you know, pretty much everything important in the cell. They're the workhorses.
Makes sense.
He also mentioned that prokaryotes, like bacteria and archaea, usually have a cell wall outside the plasma membrane. It's thick, tough, helps them handle internal pressure so they don't burst. Important for single-celled life.
Okay, this leads to a really fascinating question Dr. Hoffman raised. If cells are the building blocks, why don't we see just like giant single cells? Why aren't we one enormous cell?
Huh? Yeah, it's a great question. It comes down to physics, really. Specifically, the surface area to volume ratio.
Right.
He used a simple cube example. Imagine a 1 by 1 by 1 cube. Surface area is 6, volume is 1, ratio is 6 to 1.
Right.
Now make it a 5 by 5 by 5 cube. Surface area jumps to 150, volume jumps to 125. The ratio drops to 150 over 125, which is only 1.2 to 1.
So as the cell gets bigger, the surface area doesn't keep up with the volume.
Exactly. It decreases relative to the volume. And why does that matter? Because the cell's surface, the plasma membrane, is where all the exchange happens, getting nutrients in, getting waste out.
So if it gets too big, it can't feed itself, or get rid of waste efficiently enough through its skin.
Precisely. It just doesn't have enough surface area to service that huge internal volume. It would starve or poison itself. That's the limit.
Which is why we're made of trillions of small cells, not one big one.
Exactly. Dr. Hoffman pointed out that our, 100 trillion cells are all roughly the same size as the single cell we started from, the zygote. We grow by adding more cells, not bigger ones.
By constantly replacing them too, right?
Yeah, constantly. You don't have the same cells you were born with. They divide, die off, get replaced. It's continuous renewal.
Okay, let's take that tour inside the eukaryotic cell now.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hoffman used this cartoon animal cell diagram. He mentioned it's a bit of a general picture, right? Not every animal cell has all these parts.
Yeah, it's a composite, a sort of greatest hits picture to show the main players. But it works.
So, first stop, the nucleus. The big one, usually near the center. He called it multiply membrane bounded.
Right. It has two membranes making up the nuclear envelope. This is the cell's command center. It holds the DNA.
And that's where the instructions are read.
That's where transcription happens, making messenger RNA or mRNA from the DNA template. But the mRNA needs to get out to the ribosomes to actually build proteins.
How does it do that? Through the membrane.
Through nuclear pores, little regulated tunnels in the nuclear envelope that let the mRNA out into the cytoplasm.
Okay, and you mentioned cytoplasm. What's nucleoplasm then?
Simple distinction. Nucleoplasm is the stuff inside the nucleus. Cytoplasm in eukaryotes is everything outside the nucleus and other membrane-bound organelles, but still inside the main cell membrane. And inside the nucleus, you also find the nucleolus.
What's that do?
That's mainly involved in making other types of RNA, like the ribosomal RNA that forms part of the ribosomes themselves.
Got it. Okay, moving out from the nucleus, the endoplasmic reticulum, the ER. Dr. Hoffman noted it's actually connected to the outer nuclear membrane.
Yeah, it's continuous. And it comes in two flavors, rough ER and smooth ER.
What makes the rough ER rough?
Ribosomes. They're studded all over its surface. Its main job, as Dr. Hoffman explained, is to take those newly made proteins from the ribosomes, fold them correctly, modify them inside its internal space, the lumen, and then package them up into little membrane bubbles called vesicles for transport. It's like protein quality control and packaging.
And the smooth ER, no ribosomes.
Nope. Hence, smooth. Its big roles are making lipids, like steroids, and storing things. A key example is storing calcium ions, which is super important for muscle contraction.
Okay. Next up, often nearby, is the Golgi apparatus, or Golgi complex. Looks a bit like the ER, stacks of flattened sacks.
Yeah, similar look, different job. Dr. Hoffman's analogy was perfect. Mm. It's the cell's receiving and shipping center.
How does that work?
So those vesicles from the rough ER, full of proteins, they travel to the Golgi and fuse with its cis face, the receiving side. The Golgi takes in the proteins, sorts them, modifies them further if needed, like adding sugar tags, and then repackages them into new vesicles.
And ships them out.
Exactly. These new vesicles butt off the transface, the shipping side, and head off to their final destinations, maybe elsewhere in the cell, maybe to the plasma membrane to be secreted outside the cell. That's exocytosis.
And this involves membranes fusing and butting off.
Constantly. Dr. Hoffman emphasized how dynamic these membranes are. They're not static. They flow, merge, recycle. It's a very fluid system.
Okay, what about lysosomes and peroxisomes? More little vesicles.
Yep, specialized ones. Lysosomes literally means splitting bodies. They're filled with powerful digestive enzymes, hydrolytic enzymes.
Sounds dangerous.
It would be if they weren't safely contained in their own membrane. That job is to break down waste materials, debris, old organelles, stuff brought in from outside, like the cell's recycling center and garbage disposal.
And peroxisomes.
They handle hazardous molecules, too, specifically reactive oxygen species like hydrogen peroxide. They contain enzymes to break those down into harmless stuff like water and oxygen. Detoxification, essentially.
Right. Now, for the powerhouse, the mitochondrion, plural mitochondria, another one with multiple membranes.
Yes, an outer membrane and a highly folded inner membrane. Its main gig is cellular respiration.
Making energy.
Making ATP, adenosine triphosphate. Dr. Hoffman called it the cell's energy currency. Cellular respiration is a complex series of reactions that basically burns fuel, like glucose, incredibly efficiently to generate lots of ATP. Powers everything the cell does.
And those folds in the inner membrane, he called them cristae.
Cristae, yeah. Their job is just to dramatically increase the surface area of that inner membrane.
Why?
Because that's where many of the key proteins involved in making ATP are embedded. More surface area means more space for those protein machines, means more ATP production, efficiency.
Clever design. Okay, let's shift from organelles to the cell's internal structure. Mm-hmm. the cytoskeleton. Dr. Hoffman called it the skeleton of the cell.
A good description. It's a network of protein fibers running throughout the cytoplasm, gives the cell shape, support, helps organize things, but it's dynamic, not rigid.
You mentioned three main types.
Right. Microtubules are the thickest, like hollow tubes. They act as tracks or roadways. Motor proteins can actually walk along these microtubules, carrying vesicles or organelles from one place to another. Needs energy, ATT, of course.
Like a little transport system.
Exactly. Then there are microfilaments, also called actin filaments. They're the thinnest. Super important for structure, kind of like tension cables, but also crucial for movement. Muscle contraction involves actin sliding against another protein, myosin. Also things like amoeboid movement, cell crawling.
And the third type?
Intermediate filaments. Size-wise, they're in between the other two. These are more like true ropes, really strong, high tensile strength. Their main job is structural reinforcement, holding things in place, resisting mechanical stress.
Got it. What about the centrosome and centrioles?
Yeah.
Involved in cell division, right?
The centrosome is the main microtubule organizing center, really important for setting up the spindle fibers during cell division. It's found in both animal and plant cells. But inside the centrosome, only in animal cells, you find this pair of structures called centrioles.
The licorice stick thing.
Ha! Yeah, that's what they look like in diagrams. And here's the kicker Dr. Hoffman mentioned. Biologists still don't know for sure what centrioles actually do.
Seriously? After all this time?
Seriously. They're always there in animal cells, involved somehow with the centrosome, but their specific essential function. Still a mystery. It's one of those fascinating unknowns.
Wow. Okay, what about things outside the cell for movement? Flagella and cilia.
Right, appendages for motility. Flagella singular is flagellum are typically long, whip-like structures. Think of a sperm tail. Their job is locomotion, propelling the whole cell through a fluid, like an outboard motor.
And cilia.
Cilia, singular cilium, are much shorter and usually way more numerous, covering the cell surface. They also function in movement.
In the same way, propelling the cell.
Sometimes, yes. For single-celled organisms, they beat to make the cell tumble through water. But Dr. Hoffman highlighted another key role, especially in multicellular organisms where cells are fixed in place.
Like in our bodies.
Exactly. Think yeah. about the cells lining your trachea, your windpipe. They have cilia. They also produce mucus, which traps dust, bacteria, pollen, whatever you inhale. The cilia then beat in a coordinated wave, constantly pushing that mucus layer with all the trapped gunk upwards towards your throat.
So you can swallow it.
Yep. You swallow it, it goes down to your stomach, and the stomach acid destroys the harmful stuff. It's a cleaning mechanism run by cilia, moving the medium, the mucus, not the cell itself.
That's brilliant. How do they bend?
It's microtubules inside again, arranged in a specific pattern. Motor proteins anchored between them walk, causing the microtubules to slide past each other. But because they're anchored, the whole structure bends. Like trying to slide two pencils past each other when they're taped together at one end, they bend instead.
Incredible mechanics.
Okay.
Let's switch gears to the plant cell. Shares a lot with animal cells, but Dr. Hoffman pointed out some key differences. What's the most obvious one?
The cell wall. Definitely. Just like prokaryotes, plant cells have a thick, rigid cell wall outside their plasma membrane. Provides structural support, protection, makes plant tissues firm.
And they have those green things, chloroplasts.
Right. The sites of photosynthesis. Chloroplasts are also multiply membrane bounded. They have an outer membrane, an inner membrane, and then internal stacks of membrane sacs called thylakoids.
And their job is photosynthesis.
Yes, this incredibly complex process of taking carbon dioxide from the air, water from the soil, and using sunlight energy to convert them into sugar organic compounds. It's called carbon fixation, basically how plants make their own food and feed us indirectly.
What about connections between plant cells? You mentioned the wall is rigid.
Good question. They have specialized channels called plasmodesmata. These are little tunnels that pass directly through the cell walls of adjacent cells.
So they connect the insides.
Exactly. Hmm. The plasma membrane is continuous through these tunnels, and so is the cytoplasm. It allows for direct communication and transport of water and small molecules between plant cells, creating a connected network.
And the last big feature, that huge central vacuole, looks like it takes up most of the cell.
It often does. And vacuole is a bit misleading, like Dr. Hoffman said. It's not empty. It's mostly filled with water, called cell sap. It acts as a storage space, sometimes for waste products, pigments, or defensive compounds.
But mostly water.
Mostly water. And this is crucial for plant growth. Because the vacuole can expand rapidly just by taking in water, the plant cell can get bigger quickly without having to synthesize a lot of new, metabolically expensive cytoplasm, makes growth cheaper and faster.
Ah, so that's why plants need lots of water to grow tall, and why they wilt.
Exactly. When the vacuole loses water, the cell loses turgor pressure, and the plant wilts.
Okay, last topic.
Yeah.
How do animal cells connect? No cell walls, no plasmodesmata. Dr. Hoffman started with the extracellular matrix, the ECM.
Right. Animal cells often secrete this complex meshwork of molecules outside themselves, the ECM. It's rich in proteins like collagen and glycoproteins, proteins with sugar chains attached.
Sugar ID badges.
Sort of, yeah. These can be involved in cell recognition, how cells know who their neighbors are, and proteins in the cell membrane often anchor to both the ECM outside and the cytoskeleton inside, linking everything together for strength.
And then there are direct junctions between animal cells. He mentioned three types.
Three main types. First, desmosomes. Think of these as spot welds or rivets. They're protein complexes that strongly anchor cells to each other, providing mechanical strength, especially in tissues that get stretched, like skin or muscle.
Okay, spot welds. What else?
Gap junctions. These are the closest thing animal cells have to plasmodesmata. They're channels, little protein-lined pores that directly connect the cytoplasm of adjacent cells.
For communication.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Small molecules and ions can pass right through. This is super important in tissues like heart muscle, where electrical signals need to pass quickly between cells to coordinate contraction.
Makes sense. And the last type, tight junctions.
Tight junctions are different. They form a continuous seal, like a zipper or a band of tape, all the way around the cell, fusing it tightly to its neighbors.
What's the point of that?
To prevent leakage between cells. They block what's called the paracellular route. Think about the lining of your intestines or your skin. You don't want stuff just seeping randomly between the cells.
You want to control what gets through.
Precisely. Tight junctions force substances to go through the cells, the cellular route, where the cell can control transport rather than slipping between them. They create a barrier, essential for separating different body compartments.
Wow. From the scale of things down to these tiny junctions.
Yeah.
It's just an incredible level of organization. Dr. Hoffman's tour really highlights the sheer elegance and complexity packed into every single cell.
It really does.
And hopefully this deep dive gives you a solid grasp of that fundamental machinery that makes life possible. It's a lot, but it's fascinating.
Absolutely. And the thing to remember, which Dr. Hoffman touched on, is that these aren't static diagrams. It's all incredibly dynamic. Membranes flowing, proteins moving, signals flashing. It's a constant dance inside every cell.
A microscopic ballet.
Yeah, something like that. Billions of these little powerhouses constantly working, adapting, communicating, recycling. It really makes you appreciate the intricate systems keeping us going right now. Gives you something to think about, doesn't it? The sheer efficiency happening beneath the surface.